to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Just about Weber on the board. We have S&P to the moon. Alice up 28 points. Dow futures up 251. Nasdaq futures up 78. Frank, how are you?
Good. Europe's up pretty big, too.
Well, that's what a trillion euros will get you, Frank. At least a week's rally now.
Right, and right now the EU agreed to extend their negotiations, or keep on negotiation in front of December 31st, the cutoff for Brexit. And Germany's up 1.5 points and or percent, and they're going into full lockdown until after the New Year, so you figure what's going on.
So anybody thinks that any of these lockdowns, this is like bleeding people. Does anybody think they work?
At certain levels. I don't know if lockdowns of restaurants work. We're starting to get data that shows that, you know, restaurants are somewhat around 5% or less, and homes are 75%.
So send people home. That has not worked since February.
Make them sleep at work.
I mean, it hasn't worked since February, but we just keep doing more and more of it.
Well, the object is not to let anybody in your home, but that is obviously a choice of privilege, not necessity.
I think we're having government by trial and error and monkey see, monkey do. Just saying.
Right. What I read about the Germans said that they were closing down non-essential businesses like shops, but it certainly didn't say anything about beer halls. So there still might be a chance for a putsch there.
All right. So now the question comes: is the the person who comes and cuts the grass and delivers the German people's parliament's, you know, sandwiches and stuff, are they considered essential?
I would say so.
Well,
I mean, you know, everybody has a different definition of essential.
It's true.
Trump actually came out last night and said that the White House staff close to the president and vice president wouldn't be at the beginning of receiving the vaccine. But I say give it to the Secret Service if there's anybody that needs it still there.
I have
taken a punch.
I have a real ignorant Southside question. Coming from a person who, as I think listeners know by now, I was a COVID guy for a while. And
you got it from your truck.
I think I got it from
your Secret Service truck.
I think I got it from the hospital. I had a test in, but that's another issue. Anyway, I was the fortunate ones that had like almost no symptoms, and I now have the antibodies, which aren't going to last forever, I know, but let's call it conservative and say they're going to last a year. I'm going to say, Frank, given the incredible amount of data that crosses the Stocks and Jacks, between Maddie getting the tweets and everything else and me getting all the stuff and the guy who signed me up for the coronavirus hot list, coronavirus, I'm going to guess that in a state of Illinois that has allegedly 700,000 confirmed cases, I'm going to go with 2.5 to 3 million actual cases. And I'll bet I'm
right. So what's that leave, another 10? What is our population now?
I don't think it's... We're not over 10, are we? You know what
I
mean?
I have no idea.
I don't think we are.
I'm actually surprised if we're going up.
Yeah, I think
it
we're
still
going
leaves
up. Or at least some. There's no doubt. But my point is, if we end up with 2 million vaccines...
You're asking what's the population of Illinois?
Yeah.
12.67 million.
All right. Well, then I'm,
that's pretty good, Frank.
All right, then I'm guessing I'm wrong. And then I'm thinking there's more like 4 to 4.5 if you had it. Anyway, I think it's like 30%. But that's just one guess. But let me just say this. Anybody who requires me to get this vaccine before somebody who hasn't had it is out of his friggin' mind. Why? If we get 2 million doses, it should go to people who haven't had it already. I'm going to say...
Oh, I agree. They have coronavirus antibody tests that cost like $5.
Actually...
You can go to the pharmacy and get one.
Well, here, you know what the story is? And the test?
12 days. The state gives it to you, and we got to wait 12 days.
Well, I've waited one day for mine.
You paid up for it, though, right?
I did not. From what I understand, I don't know how this works, I'm axing. If your doctor orders it, it's free. If you just wander in to want one, it's $150.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because doctors are requiring you to have antibody tests, some of them, before you go in.
Well, it makes a difference.
I had a situation. They didn't write me a prescription. Of course, that was 5 months ago, so it's a fluid situation, I would imagine.
Yeah, but you're assuming that they like you.
That's true. Send that owl guy over to see Frank.
So, Maddie, I tell Frank yesterday, I'm talking to him, as we're prepping for the show, right, and just generally BS and talking about the Irish and Dub Bears. So I tell Frank, you know, I went to this really good Mexican place right by you on Saturday night that, of course, is open, family-owned place, and it was, you know, it was great. He goes, where was I? I can't tell you. You're a male Karen. You're able to call your buddy Jay. He was most insulted. He goes, I wouldn't tell on anybody, which I know he wouldn't. But I had to give him grief.
Hey, one question, and I knew where it was.
Well, yeah, I gave you a hint.
Well, it was a pretty big hint.
Well, yeah, it was a pretty. Or it had to be for you, for God's sake. But yeah, there's a nice Mexican family owns the place. Lady who owns it comes by, asks how your dinner is. Very nice. So, the place was mobbed, and the food was good. You know, I do love it. It's like what they say in the Quiet Man, let's go talk a little revolution. It feels like I'm doing the same thing every time I go to one of these places. But, anyway.
There's stuff open all over. Any bar in unincorporated areas is open right now. You know where the Target is on the border of Will and Cook County on Archer, over by the entrance to, it's right by 131 and 131st and 355.
All right, yeah.
There's a trailer park there. That bar has 30 pickups in it every time I drive by.
Well, then you can't. If you go, you got to drive with me in the Suburban. The Suburban would be welcome, I'm sure, especially since it's Secret Service.
Oh, I'd walk in and say, hey, college boy.
Yeah.
You too.
Not me. I could dress down, and I wouldn't be wearing a mask. You would be. Just saying.
Well, they've all had it.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. It's a weird part. You go to these, like, a Mexican restaurant, and everybody's in there. This is after I read all afternoon, because I'm trying to do some research on this, trying to keep ahead of it, so at least I have some idea what I'm talking about when I talk about it. I was reading about how nobody can explain why some incredibly higher percentage of Hispanics in the Chicago area have had it than white people. I'm sitting there going, look around you. Who the hell do you think is working all day long? When your landscaper shows up, when you look into the kitchen and you see who the cooks are, you see the people delivering it. Well, for God's sake, duh.
Do you think an Italian's making your pizza?
it's some. I mean, if you go to one of these, like these, they used to be owned all by Greek people, so I call them the Greek breakfast joints. If you go in there, and they always have like a little Mexican spot on the menu, some of that's the best Mexican food you'll ever eat because all the cooks are Mexican. right?
Right. The cash register's run by the guy or his daughter.
Yeah. And but anywho, hey, so yet again, maybe you can explain this to me, Frank, since you're, you know, one of the more liberal people on the show. Why is it?
Well, that's a low bar.
It is a low. Wait a minute. Brendan thinks he is. He'd almost fight with
you. Well, Brendan is, and so is Maddie.
Yeah, but Maddie's...
The rest of the you guys refer to us as the cell.
Me? I'm in the middle. I'm just saying, you know. I'm a middle kind of guy. Anyway, but I will say this, and maybe you can explain, or you or one of our other guys. Why is it... Is it just me? Just my luck? Everything I read that I consider to be a reasonably scientific test regarding the COVID, every single one has been from overseas. Are we censoring, you know, like just regular studies here, or what are we doing?
Our government does not believe in science anymore, so these things have to be funded. Also, we have problems getting data because it's been sent. That's what's been censored: the distribution and collection of data in the United States. Overseas, they have access to, they have socialized medicine. So they have really pretty robust data about what's happening in the doctor's offices and in the hospitals. We don't.
No. Well, you know,
there's the difference.
Remember the study years ago, of course, who knows how good the study was, something I read, that whenever, you know, you don't see people doing as much anymore, but 10, 15 years ago, whenever some loser would go in front of Congress and get grilled by congressional people, the guy would, everything he'd say is, well, quite frankly, this is the answer. So somebody somewhere, I don't know how the hell he did it, or even if they did do it, said that every time somebody says quite frankly before he gives an answer, he's like 60% chance of being a liar or something. You know, something ridiculous like that. So when you hear somebody saying that, or, you know, to be truthful, then it's usually not truthful. Anyway.
I told you not to watch Fox, Tom.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I'm reading this article here in Yahoo News, of all places, by Kate Callant, all right? And when I quote something, I always like to give the name. And what set me on to this is we're getting some new systems back up here at PTI just to make sure we're even better. And one of the guys who's coming in to do it for us is the guy who originally wired the whole office for telephones and everything. And I said to him, where's your buddy, Tom? And real nice guy, Hawaiian dude. Ended up making his own barbecue sauce, which is delicious. And he tells me he died of COVID. And I'm like, wow. I said, did he have any other? He said, no, he was perfectly healthy, except he'd been fighting diabetes like forever and finally got it totally under control. And I really, really liked the guy. So I just felt awful. And of course, since I had it and sailed through it in 10 days, didn't even know I had it. I mean, I almost feel like guilty, right? But anyway, I really liked the dude. And so all of a sudden I see this article that in London now, these guys, after watching some people have nothing but trouble with this disease and other people walking around like, you know, they, what do you even give me grief for? I want to go out. Turns out that the London researchers have found out that when you treat these people, there's five key genes now that are linked with the most severe form of COVID-19, scientists said on Friday. And research that also pointed to several existing drugs, that could be repurposed to treat people who risk getting critically ill with the pandemic disease. So they've got that five genes involved in two molecular processes, antiviral immunity and lung inflammation, were central to many severe cases. Our results immediately highlight which drugs should be at the top of the list for clinical testing. And the genes are, here's a good one for you, Frank. I can't even say them, so. Called IFNAR2. Do you know if you have that gene? Now, Maddie's got this one, TYK2. OAS1, there's one for Cat. Anyway, partially explain why some people become desperately sick with COVID while others are not affected. So now what they're doing is, if they're testing for these genes, and anyway, the most potential is something called there's a class of anti-inflammatory drugs called JAK inhibitors, which includes an arthritis drug, which evidently works pretty dramatically against inflammation for like people with diabetes and stuff. So I'm not saying our guys aren't doing anything. I would never say that, but I don't see how, the treatment for these people shouldn't be dying, or at least because there's the anyway. Well, here's another one.
I'm guessing our guys like at Rush knew about it before you.
Probably.
And Yahoo. I know my primary care physician's at Rush.
Okay.
And she said in June or July that the true risk is for people with diabetes. And
well,
so
yeah,
that is the population that you would expect it at. And the two people of color populations that are being hit have higher rates of diabetes.
Yes, and a lot of it's untreated, too.
Right.
And
that's access to medical care, which we don't have a problem with in this country. I've heard a couple other people around say that. Not you.
No.
But there's a huge medical delivery problem, medical care delivery problem in this country, and it probably should be addressed.
Well, I mean, it obviously, when somebody like Tom, my buddy who died, you know, obviously the guy's strong as an axe. He, you know, for him to die and for me to walk through the week and say, I don't even think I have it. I mean, clearly there's something going on here, right? And obviously, I mean, it looks like this, that if they would have, you're supposed to give these guys a steroid called dimethyltransazole. Well, I can never be a doctor. I can't pronounce this stuff. There's a new antiviral drug made by Gilead, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so evidently, when you go to treat, I'm not saying that the people at Rush are totally clueless about this. They're probably not. But, I mean, there is some learning going on here in some places. And, I mean, there's a reason why in London, 22,000 people had the disease, or how many? 220,000 people had a disease in April, and 22,000 died. And in October or whatever, something like 200,000 people had a disease and 2,000 died. I mean, there's a reason why that is. I think maybe some of it might be the viruses got a little less deadly.
Well, I'm sure it's treatment.
Well,
smarter.
I also think that the virus has become a little less virulent and probably more contagious.
I know my sister-in-law got it, and she still can't taste or smell after 7 weeks. Now, that makes living with my brother easier, I would imagine. But I've told him that.
Oh, God.
But I don't want to get this. I know a number of people who can not taste or smell for a long period after they can't taste.
I didn't have any of that. But even young people have said that. And I'm surely not young. But, I mean, I didn't have any issue with that.
We could have used that for the Notre Dame dining halls.
Now. Yeah, no kidding. Anyway, so what do you... At some point here, Frank, I mean, now we have last week, obviously, I talked about it Friday, but I wanted to have some of it for you. Another $1.3 trillion. This is European Union agrees on a $2 trillion package. And then they're fighting back and forth with Poland and somebody else about whether they're actually going to do it. But why do they keep saying that this is going to be, that this is fiscal policy? There's no way on earth, Frank. How the hell are they going to borrow money at minus 0.59%? It's just going to be printed money, right?
It's a pyramid scheme. You know that, Tom.
Why do people always feel, I mean, always, sometimes they don't recognize what they're doing. I don't think they recognize what they were doing in the 70s, when they were early 70s and they were pouring money into the system, that it was going to create the late 70s, early 80s stagflation, which I hope that name stays in Webster's. We don't use that word anymore, but I don't think it's going to. Why do people think always that there's not going to be a comeuppance this time? If you were to ask Jay Powell, gee, look what you're doing, Jay. Someday you got to stop this or go back the other way. Why aren't you just going to cause him to go flying right back down again? They wouldn't even answer that question. Now, why? Why is that? I mean,
in our lifetime, only one politician admitted he was wrong, and that was McNamara about the war in Vietnam. Other than that, can you name any others that admitted they were wrong?
Yeah, but Frank, when you reach a certain age, some people only got to make it to like 22. If you overdrink, you're gonna get a hangover. I mean, at some point, why do you think that person, the next time he heads into the bar, thinks if I have 15 beers and 12 shots tonight, I'm not going to have a hangover? Does he forget about it that quick?
No, he doesn't. But they learn to take, a swig of codeine cough syrup or some sort of painkiller before they go to bed.
I hope they're not doing the Tylenol. Blow out the liver.
That'll tear up your gut.
Yeah, that'll do it. Didn't a couple of guys on the trading floor damn near die from that?
Yeah, but they were weightlifters who were abusing steroids.
Oh.
And drinking. You know. I don't want to say the names, obviously.
Do you remember the guy that was going for he was doing the bodybuilding stuff, and he got so, his traps got so big that he couldn't reach around, and the guys would flip up his collar all day so to piss him off because he couldn't reach back and put his collar on.
He was a fellow trader's son.
Yeah, yeah.
If you remember.
Yeah.
No, I don't remember him. You can be the sole party to this lawsuit.
Well, no, his booth.
I know, yes.
And from where I was in the OEX, I could look through, and he was at, like, the second booth behind the book, behind where the Schwab guys were. And all of a sudden, I'd see somebody go by, and I'd see him walk out all pissed off, and his collar up, and somebody else, he couldn't put the collar down. Anyway, the thing...
He couldn't move real quickly. I mean, I could probably, at my advanced stage, could outrun him.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he couldn't move too fast.
Even you.
Does the term muscle-bound... Anyway, so, I mean, at some point, do we ever fade here? I mean, we know that somewhere along the line, somebody's going to trip over this. The question is, why do we think we're on the Weimar and Argentina thing, that we're just going to go to the moon with the market and as the dollar degrades and we're going down that road? Why are we continually thinking, oh, by the way, did you, I'm shifting gears here, did you happen to catch 60 Minutes last night? Did you maybe?
Yes.
I did not see it.
Anyway, it was like they were listening to the show. They had some company, and just my question is, I don't know who the hell I got to ask for this. Like, we got to find we got so many attorneys. We need one more. What's the name of the outfit, Frank, that bought up all the hospitals in Northern California, and then medical practices as well? Anyway, some begins with an S.
It wasn't Kaiser Permanente.
No, it was an S. Anyway, they bought up so many places and raised the prices. To where having a baby or anything else in Northern California is at least twice as expensive now as even in Southern California, let alone like any other state. And these guys are and they've got the attorney general or somebody on there, and he's come up with this lawsuit against these guys. And they've been 5 years they've been working on a lawsuit, because they don't want to lose. And I think at the end of it, Frank, I was going back and forth with talking to somebody about the show. They said they were going to pay this $500 million fine or some number. I mean, if you can help me with this, that they're going to pay this settlement. And I'm thinking, who gets that money? If the insurance companies, the businesses, like if PTI was in Northern California, do we get some of the money back because we had to pay
the people that pay non-negotiated prices? No. The basic message is, hospitals can raise their prices as high as they want to.
Well, so after 5 years, say it is $500 million, I'm going to say those guys have made 10 times that. But here's my question, and I know you're not an attorney, but you've been known to read a book without pictures. How is it that the biggest change in this antitrust, to me, and maybe it was never a change, maybe they never did it this way, but when I read the Clayton Act, the Sherman Act, and I'll just purse it a little bit. I'll say what it said: every contract that results in restraint of trade is considered a felony. How do we get from that? That reads to me like it's a criminal charge. How do we get from there to a lawsuit and some settlement to where the politician goes on to the next job and becomes a senator, but doesn't do anything for anybody else?
We're loath to send rich white guys to jail. You can start there. You know, look at the opioid crisis in Purdue.
Yeah, but
pharmaceutical. There's an example.
But if a rich white guy...
If a corporation's a person, fine. Send all those people that run the place to jail for something like that.
Well, I mean, but I'm saying
we don't care about monopolies anymore.
What,
we only do it to go after somebody for that if they've done something politically incorrect.
But if
how does Facebook buy Instagram? Maybe Maddie knows.
Well, what I'm saying is the law seems to define this as a criminal offense. Obviously, a felony is a criminal offense. I mean, how do we get from there to Frank Fahey steals 10 cases of beer from the White Hen? There is no White Hen anymore. I'm dating myself. The 7-Eleven. And after 5 years of discussion, agrees to pay back one case on a civil suit. How did that go from being a criminal offense to a civil suit and you settling in it?
Perhaps that has something to do with the cost of litigating is more expensive than anything else.
Well, but,
so an admission of guilt, but partial restitution, it works.
But the criminal, I'm not saying we should go to France and be, you know, guilty to your proven innocent. But if somebody buys a hospital and 4 months later every price is doubled or they put them out of business or something and it's right there like the nose in your, like the hair in your nose and why isn't everybody the cuff slammed on and doing a perp walk and they may beat the rap, but it there's a combination that's resulting in a restraint of trade. A third grader can see that.
Well, we have the same thing happening in Illinois. I mean, remember when Westlake Hospital was bought or the one in Blue Island was bought? And they said, oh, no, we won't close it down and they're shutting it down in 2 months. So we have huge swaths of the city that don't have easy access to medical care. This is how you're going to end up with socialized medicine. You had to go to Evanston or Highland Park.
Right.
Jeez.
Well, I mean,
you should be able to go, you know, within at least a couple miles of your house to get decent medical care.
Well, yeah, Frank. Well, is this we'll talk a little bit more about this subject next week because, yeah, those guys are. When you start talking double $700,000 for a preemie baby, that's a lot of money. Anyway, have a good week.
Did I do a good job with my liberal hat?
we'll ask John Flanagan how you did. SP futures up 28. Nasdaq futures up 73. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Well, in one page, Stacks and Jacks, I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber. So, Matt, if you had to guess, how many days has it been, how many times has it been that we are up because of potential of a stimulus deal in the last 200 days?
It's a lot, isn't it?
Yes, it is. We finally get one. What are we going to do, just tank the market or what? Because we're tired. Because we can't ever say that again or what? S&P is up 28, Nasdaq is up 74, Dow up 255. Obviously, we have vaccinations being given some places today, I think. DAX up 166, 1.3%. FTSE up 20.3%. CAC around up 58, 1%. Guess what? They put off the deadline for Brexit. I'm going to say that was a 99% chance, Matty. Do the rest of the world read the papers like we do? These guys must love this. People from Belgium, you think they love this negotiating? See, as long as you're negotiating, the drinks and the shrimp cocktails are on the European Union, right? I think we'll keep negotiating forever. And I know that's being a little harsh, but Nikkei 79.3%, Shanghai of 21.6%, Hang Seng actually down 116.4%. What's with those guys? Bonds, 0.92, sneaking back up again. Are we going to make it to one is the question. That's up 3 basis points. The Bund, minus 0.61. As they say, they're going to go out and borrow €1.4 trillion. I don't know how you're going to borrow anything when you're getting money from the other guy, but they claim they are. Japan on a positive 0.2%. Oil up 48 cents, 47.05. That's certainly the highest we've seen there in a while. Rent up 52 cents, 50.49. Natural gas up 11 cents, 2.70, because it's getting a little colder. RBOB up a penny to 131. Gold hovers down 15 bucks, 18.28, but seemingly comfortably above 18, not below like it was for a while. Silver down 15 cents, 23.93. Copper unchanged at 352. Maybe we got for us. Traffic, weather, sports. I want my playoff tickets. I want my Super Bowl tickets. Bears are back.
Well, they're not dead. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a good start so far on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Absolutely no delays to speak of on any of the area expressways, so that's good news. Off the expressways, looks like we have a couple of issues on the screen here. Down south, Torrance Avenue between 122nd and 126th is closed due to an accident involving a semi. So crews are on the scene there. And then in the southwest suburbs, there's a broken water main that's causing some delays at Larkin Avenue in the Joliet area between West Acres, or right at West Acres Road. So that's causing a slowdown in that area. But everything else is quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to be a cold day. We'll see some sunshine later on, but a high of just 30. Right now it's overcast and 29 degrees downtown, so we'll pretty much stay right here temperature-wise. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 62. Right now it's clear and 45. In sports, as Chief mentioned, the Bears snapped their six-game losing skid, blowing out the Texans at home yesterday. 36-7 was the final in that one. Mitchell Trubisky was the star of the show, 24 of 33, 267 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, as he's played well the last couple of weeks. David Montgomery broke an 80-yard touchdown run early in the game. Didn't get a lot of action the rest of the way, but finished with 11 carries and 113 yards and that one touchdown. And Allen Robinson led the receiving corps, as he has most of the season, catching 9 balls for 123 yards and a touchdown. It was a very good team effort. On defense, Roquan Smith was spectacular. 12 tackles and a couple of sacks. Khalil Mack also forced and recovered a fumble, two on defense. So the Bears are 6-7, having finally won for the first time since mid-October, and are not out of the playoffs yet if they win out, but obviously very unlikely that that's going to happen. Arizona Cardinals got a big win too, improving to 7-6. They beat the Giants 26-7. Sunday Night Football, the Steelers have now lost 2 in a row, Chief. They were beaten by the Bills 26-15. And lastly, Lovie Smith is out as head coach of Illinois. He was fired after 5 seasons where he went 17-39 in 5 years, 10-33 in the Big Ten.
And a dude from Auburn got canned, and he was what, 65-30-something?
And won a national title.
Yeah.
But they had been kind of down by their standard the last couple of years.
Do you think these people from the South, here's a shot, do you think these people can realize only one team can win per year? And if your team doesn't win, if they all fire the coaches, then they all, everybody else hires them, it's just kind of a piggy move up, piggy move around, whatever you want to call it. Just saying. Hey, you know where they were? They're now calling rain delays?
They changed the name of rain delays?
No. I'm looking here because when Maddie and I are on the way in. John, how are you?
Good, Tom, and you?
All right, I'm going through the idea that there was a shooting again at Webby's Curve on Saturday night, the spot over by the McCormick place where you have to slow down. So if you're going to shoot somebody, that's the spot where you shoot them coming off the drive going on to the Ryan. And I think there was a shooting on the Eisenhower in the afternoon on Saturday. So I'm looking here at Hey Jackass, and they've got 1:15 p.m., like in the middle of the day, on Friday, there's a shooting at 107th and Avenue J over in the avenues. And there wasn't a shooting until 9:25 of that night, right, in West Pullman. Then there was one here at right by you, John, Irving Park in Kedzie.
Yeah.
Which somebody must have died there as a story. So in between there, as those of you who remember, it pretty much poured all day Friday. So, hey, Jackass had called it a rain delay, so there was no shootings for that 8 hours. I mean, it's really not funny, but do you think anybody, as we have our mayors and our people that don't believe there should be anybody in jail, and again, I'm not a criminologist by any stretch, but if anybody doesn't think that some of the horde of people leaving Chicago is because it's dangerous to live here now, or people are perceiving that, you better wake up, Lori and gang, because, I mean, the carjackings in our neighborhood, the guy getting shot on tape on the south side, I mean, anybody who thinks that this is, that people want to live in a place like that, you know, that these aren't all good boys, that, you know, or if they just would have given them one more free lunch, everything would be okay. I mean, this is not the case. People are just saying they're getting the hell out of here. I mean, you know what? I'd love to debate them, but I don't know how you can. I don't know how you coach fear or lack thereof. I mean, what do you think?
I think it's clear that if, you know, anybody who's got small children, you know, adolescent children, kids who have to travel distances for, you know, going to high school, when we did have things like in-class instruction. But when you've got family members who are out and about, and you have any money or the prospect of being able to get a job somewhere else, I think you would be well advised to leave. I just don't see that the signs are encouraging to people who, you know, really have the ability to go elsewhere, because Illinois is, you know, doing the flip side of the welcome mat. I mean, it's pretty much telling people that, you know, the system doesn't work for people who are trying to get ahead and be law-abiding and everything else. It's just they don't seem to be too upset by the forces that are undercutting that. And just from a PR standpoint, I mean, I just don't get how they can be so blasé about the way the city is portrayed and the way the state is portrayed. None of this seems to bother any of the state officials or the people in city government to the extent that they think there's anything unusual about it. And it makes you think that they've just accepted an impossible situation and see that as kind of, you know, the way it's going to be from now on. I read some time ago that Lori Lightfoot had hired somebody to refashion the city's image from a tourism standpoint with her as the centerpiece. You know, this is going to be marketed as Lori Lightfoot's town, and people would come here just so they could bask in the glory of Lori Lightfoot. And I don't know what kind of thinking politician thinks that much of themselves that they think they've got that kind of star power, but at a time when people are looking for opportunities to get out of the city pretty quickly, Lori Lightfoot's image is not enough to keep people here, and certainly not to attract new people here. So I'm pretty much as discouraged as you are, I think.
Well, the disgustingly, I use the term egocentric. a lot of the male politicians are. I'm going to say some of the ladies appear to be just as bad, or maybe even worse, if it's possible. I mean, they obviously, when you see people on tape shooting down a retired fire lieutenant, and you have the carjackings up, what, two or three times from last year, expressway shootings up two and three times, and you're, what's Kim Fox's job?
State's attorney.
And she walks out and feels her message is that she let a whole bunch of people out of jail. Now, I'm not about to say that there aren't people in county jail that have no business being in jail with the bail system and with the COVID and all the other stuff. So I'm sure on a technical level, there's people that aren't any danger to anybody that shouldn't be in there. I mean, I'm willing to throw her that bone. But when people reel off those kind of crime stats, somebody somewhere is getting the wrong piece of education if you think you follow that up with, well, by the way, I just let half the people out of county jail. It's not exactly the message you want to deliver, even, yeah, I don't think, you know. You know.
Well, it's the drive, you know, other states' attorneys around the country, you know, no cash bail. You know, it's a draconian way of forcing people to stay in prison. So, you know, looking for ways to spring people at, you know, the earliest opportunity. I get all that, and I know that there's some, you know, there's always unfairness in a system that requires cash or putting a lien on your house or whatever to guarantee you're going to show up. And the way bails are set sometimes is capricious. But there should be such a system, because otherwise people who are likely to commit crimes know how they're going to be treated in the criminal justice system better than the people who were defending themselves against crime. And if you pretty much send out an SOS that if you, you know, carjack, or if you vandalize a car, or if you steal a catalytic converter, or break into somebody's house, or push down a store window and take some merchandise, here's the threshold that you have to cross before we even go out and look for you or take a police report on it. Well, the criminals are not stupid. I mean, the good ones continue to commit crimes and, you know, do it with greater effrontery all the time because they know the system at some level is designed to protect them at a certain level, and they know that very well what that level is, and nobody seems to mind, you know, communicating that level is pretty high now. It really has encouraged criminal behavior or at least emboldened it in a way that I would have never believed possible 10, 20 years ago.
Well, you know, it's interesting, John. When I was at University of Chicago, again, you had to take a couple of courses that were kind of, I'd say, off the beaten track when it came to MBAs. But it had to do with essentially how the math and things you were learning applied to other things in society. And one of the ones was I took this one guy, and I remember more of this course than I do mostly any of the rest, shall we say. And he just went from topic to topic. And one of them was crime and punishment. And he said, you know, take away the Leopold and Loeb murders and the fact that somebody might, you know, knife the guy or shoot the guy that just stole your girlfriend, or, you know, there's out of all the crimes in the world, there's some percentage that are total crimes of passion or just people who like to see people suffer or whatever. But most of them, I won't put a percentage on it, but I'd say a high percentage of them are essentially rational thought. You know, what is my chances of getting caught? And if I get caught, what's going to happen to me? Or, you know, that type of thing. So clearly, like you're saying, if you believe that and you put up a sign at the 7-Eleven, by the way, if you steal more than five cases, we're going to come looking for you. You're going to find that nobody steals more than five cases unless they're an absolute moron, right? Or they find a way to find an angle and then steal 500 cases, but you clearly aren't going to find somebody dumb enough to steal six. I would hope.
Only somebody who's new to the game.
Only somebody who's new to the game.
New in town.
New in town. I mean, yeah, so, I mean, they that was their rationale. And I think that that's essentially what you're finding out. I mean, if it turns out that, if it's a property crime and we're not going to prosecute shoplifting, I think you're going to find out that the shoplifting goes up, not down. And if anything, in New York, when they decided if you prosecute some of the smaller cases, people never grow up to be bigger crooks, They were pretty successful with that, and yet nobody wants to do that. And now here we've pretty much said that crime and punishment is a race problem, and so we're going to deal with it that way. But how do you take that? I'm not saying Kim Fox is all wrong; she's probably not. But years ago, before Tom Dart, before Sheehan, before the guy before, like four sheriffs ago, there was a dude who was on one of the Saturday morning shows I was listening to. I forget his name, and he was saying that the average education level in county jail is like sixth grade. Now, this is coming out of our fine Chicago school system. I'm sure they all graduated. He says, you let those people out, they're coming right back. He goes, there's no schooling in here. There's no money spent to give anybody a trade. There's no thought whatsoever that when you let somebody out, they're not going to be back, because that's the only, in essence, job they have when they get here and when they leave. So the fact that you've got, some percentage coming back, because that shouldn't be a shock to anybody. So clearly that's just letting everybody out is not an issue. But if there's any kind of classes, if there's any kind of trade school, if there's anything like that in county jail. Now, in Nevada, I don't think they want to let anybody out unless they have some chance of getting a regular job. We don't do any of that here, or very little of it. So, I don't know how you... I don't know how we have people that supposedly are so smart in these positions, and it seems pretty obvious, John. It is causing an economic harm to Chicago, and I think it's going to continue. There was a wake up call for me on Saturday to hear about some shooting in the middle of the day in the expressway. I don't usually have any thought whatsoever that if it's in the daytime I can be on an expressway and I get shot at. How do I have to? When Matty Weber and I come in the morning, he literally has to be shotgun with a shotgun. Are we reaching that stage? We're probably not there yet, but all it takes is once, right?
Right. Last week, a student at my old high school, Mount Carmel, was killed not far from his home on the south side. Isaiah Wade, who's a sophomore at Carmel, and had nothing to do with his attendance at Mount Carmel, and he sounded like a good kid and, not into any kind of trouble or anything else, and was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it's so senseless. And again, this doesn't even warrant much of a paragraph in the news anymore, because there's so many other stories like this. But I just feel that, when we take so little account of what's being done every day, and the way this wears down people, not just people who are being victimized by it and their families, but the sense that there's nothing that can be done about it, and everybody has to just wait for their number to come up, and you live your life, as best you can when there's, increased risks in everything you do, and you overlay the COVID mess and everything else, and people are exhausted. There's just this. I've seen more Christmas decorations up in my neighborhood this year than I ever have, and I think people are trying to make a statement that this is all they can do now to express any enthusiasm they have about anything, because what else can you be enthusiastic about or happy about or be looking forward to? It's a very poignant thing to walk around the neighborhood here.
Well,
of lights and stuff. Yeah. It's always been a certain core of people who do it, but this year it's remarkable. And I think it's traceable to this little, it's like quiet desperation, to quote Thoreau. There's something going on that people have no other way of expressing what's really going on in their heads.
The issue with all this, I was listening to 60 Minutes last night, I was talking about it with Frank, and I don't see where the idea of these people to monopolize and cause incredible economic hardship to people. First of all, I guess if you end up running a company, owning a company, I own most of PTA, not most, I'm the highest percentage, but when for instance something happens and somebody buys up five hospitals, and your insurance per person goes from $2,000 a month to $2,500. One of the things that we don't, if it doesn't affect you personally, and I'm not asking everybody to take every arrow like it landed right in their own behind, but if it doesn't affect you personally, or you think it doesn't, if you're dumb enough to think it doesn't, by the way, it doesn't affect you. It's like when I talk about inflation and I see one of the, I won't say bozos on CNBC talk about there isn't any. Well, you can tell those people, don't pay for their own hospitalization. Clearly CNBC pays for it, right? But right. They at least should be smart enough to know that if the inflation there was what the rest of the inflation was, they'd be making a grand more a month. They should at least have enough economic knowledge to know it does come out of their hide, really. You know, just not the same way. You know, it's included, but the $500 that PTI has to pay more for somebody's insurance is a $500 raise we could have given somebody. But people don't seem to put that together. So, I mean, you know, what I was surprised about the issue in 60 Minutes last night, and this is my criticism of a lot of the news, is not whether it's liberal or right wing or whatever. It has to do with it. They don't really follow up. I mean, what they really should, there should have be a, I won't say a guy like me because I'm not, I don't have a face for TV, but there should be a guy like me on there afterward or somebody good looking that says, oh, by the way, these businesses in Northern California have seen in the last 10 years since this has all been happening, their insurance cost per employee has gone up 60% or 50% or whatever. We're countrywide, it's 30%. They don't bring it down to the level of anybody. Because here, most people listen to that, and they'll say, it's awful, but so what? Insurance covers it. I mean, because as a country, we've been hypnotized, or whatever the term would be, what happens when you poison somebody's mind, what's the term? We've been beat up to the point where if it's not out of our pocket, we don't care. So somewhere,
cost anybody anything.
Yeah. So somehow, in the midst of this, there should be a 30-second segment at the end and say, "Here's how it affects you. You haven't gotten a raise for 2 years. Well, here's why. Your company's now spending $10,000 more a year for your insurance than they did 2 years ago. That money should be yours. Instead, it's going to this bleep at this hospital." And they never really do that enough to piss anybody off. Which
right? It's controlled. Hysteria. It's sensationalistic enough to get people to tune in and watch it past the commercial breaks, and talk about it the next day among the other viewers, and shake their heads at how horrible it is. But if they really knew everything about what this means overall and how they were implicated in it too, and it's costing them money, and decreasing their wealth and health and everything else, you'd see a lot angrier people. And that isn't really what any of these news stories are designed to create. It's, unlimited anger. It's quite controlled. You make it about one part of the country, you cover up the fact that it's got, that's only one example of how many other hundreds you could find that you don't talk about, and why you don't talk about them. And it becomes you're creating all this pressure, and then you're creating the safety valve to let it off gradually and make it look like, we can continue with their life as usual for the next however many years, and we never hear anything more about it. It's just what you say. There's no follow-up for it, or no attempt to make it look like it's far bigger and worse than even it's being portrayed to be.
Well, like I said earlier, I didn't catch every word because I was talking to somebody regarding what we were talking about today on the show, and I think the guy said they were, whoever the district attorney was who isn't putting this case together. And, he seemed like a guy who worked hard at it. But then again, this is probably his road to being a senator or something. And they're talking about it's taking 5 years and how they're going to have this settlement, I think, of whatever it is. And I'm going to say, John, that none of that money goes back to the firms that are, or the individuals and firms that have paid insurance in that area in the last 5 years.
Of course not.
And I don't, if that doesn't happen, then what the hell? Why does California need this money? Well, they probably do, but I don't. How is that enough? I mean, there doesn't seem to be any. I mean, I think if I were to come back as a god someday, nobody want me as a god. They don't want me where I am now. But I would say that every attorney, needs to take some basic math. I mean, the 5 years this guy's been farting around with this, how much do you think the place has made? that they shouldn't have made. I mean, it's like a long time. Is it, what is it, $1 billion a year, $2 billion a year?
Right, and just how much does it cost the state and you know,
yeah,
defending legal actions, too? I mean, and all of which is just, you know, churning the system and using up valuable resources to do what? To get a not-so-great result with a largely meaningless fine at the end. You know, if any of those people were actually to do 6 months prison time for what had happened, you'd probably see the reoccurrence of that much less likely. The same thing with the housing crisis in 2008. If anybody had done time, you would have made it pretty hard for that to be repeated without somebody taking a long, hard look at whether it was worth it.
Well, unless you have your usual suspects.
Right.
I mean, whenever you talk about insider trading, it's always, you know, some guy who's, you know, of Indian descent on a board in Hong Kong or something. It's never somebody on a board of Goldman Sachs.
Right.
So, I mean, there's only so much that a bunch of white guys can say, well, yeah, okay, we put a guy away who's Indian or Pakistani who's on a board in Hong Kong. How does that relate to me necessarily, right? But on a board of Goldman Sachs. I mean, but I mean, the idea to me, again, going back to this course I had at University of Chicago, if these guys have charged double the rate for 5 years, the penalty should be 50% of everything they've charged for 5 years.
How about treble damages, too?
Well, what I'm saying, at the very least,
right,
should be what they, you know, divided by the cost of getting, or the chance of getting caught. Well, the chance of getting caught is 1 in 100, right? I mean, but how does a settlement and a promise not to do it again, what does that do for anybody? I mean, while those guys did the show last night, the guy's probably overcharged by $1 million, right? I mean, there doesn't seem to be any concept of how much money we're talking about with these people.
Not at all. And you know, it's almost a case where the prosecutions have this arsenal, you know, of weapons, like you know, criminal prosecutions or the potential for actually serving time. They're almost too powerful to be used or to be used very freely. They've become kind of intimidated themselves by it. And I think they're manipulated by whatever forces not to go the criminal route or to have some stiff prison sentence leveled against some really guilty party who engineered the whole thing and profited most from it. That never really seems to happen.
No.
It hasn't happened in a long time in any industry that I'm aware of. And I think it's because they've kind of figured out, well, it's better if we just go down this route because the potential loss in the stock price and the goodwill and the
what it means for the state revenue. Well, let's continue to save the break.
We can't go that route. We got to do something else to make it look like we got some meaningful remedy, and we didn't.
Well, I think some of it has to do with $500 million fine to every man seems like a lot of money, unless you say, oh, by the way, during the time we've been looking at it, the guys have made $4 billion. If you leave that little sentence out, the $500 sounds pretty good, right? SBF is up 29, NASDAQ is up 78. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. It's Matt Weber on the board, Mr. John Flanagan. S&P futures up 29.75 and NASDAQ futures up 76. Again, we had the European Union came out on Friday and said, by the way, we're going to put another trillion something in here. And we pushed the Brexit off to the 31st. And, you know, John, we had a, remember the guy we had on from the European Union? He was one of the representatives in Belgium. What are those guys, John? The guys that are elected to the...
Oh, yeah, the delegates or some representatives, yeah. You know, the nation states.
I'm going to say I don't like to say anything bad about our guests, because obviously they come on, but, God, Matty, was he a pompous ass or what? was right after...
Not that you would say anything.
Well, no, but it was but he came. He was right after the Brexit, and, the, you know, the Britain voted to leave, and he was like, it's clear that the European politicians didn't control their populace or something. Didn't he say something stupid like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Since when? It's like, what did William Simon say? Freedom is not anything the government gives people. It's what people take from government. It's
right.
Sometimes you can get it all backwards.
Defend with your life.
Yeah.
From the government.
So they had it just happened to be female. Talking about the vaccine, and you know, you and I talked last week. As I've been reading more and more about the testing of these vaccines, it's clearly not quite the same as we maybe would have envisioned. All right, I'm not saying it's wrong. All I'm trying to do, Dan, is one of the listeners last night was kind of going back and forth with me on email, and I said, all I'm looking for is for people who are in government to tell their people that they essentially pay their salary. I want them to tell everybody the truth, not to make judgments like Jack Nicholson of whether the people can all handle the truth, and how, you know, a Lori Lightfoot gets 90,000 votes and all of a sudden she all of a sudden can gather the truth together more than me. You know, I don't buy that, and I don't think I buy that for the rest of the citizenry either. I think you tell people the truth as best you can. You may give recommendations, but the idea that you start telling people what to do on some very base level, I'm against it. That's all I can say. But the, the story with these tests is we know that, well, I know because I had it and didn't really have any symptoms. I would never have gone and said I had COVID. I just happened to get a test for another reason and turns out I had it. Again, I was one of the lucky ones. So now I see this test, and what they're doing, this is the AstraZeneca test in Brazil now. And I'm guessing, I don't know 100%, that the rest of them were done the same way, and because I didn't hear anything different. Now, for instance, the Pfizer test, and this is the vaccine that's out first. Kick me if I'm wrong, both of you guys. Of 44,000 people, 22,000 got a placebo of some kind, 22,000 got two shots of the stuff. And after a couple of months, it wasn't all that long. There's no long-term things to this at all. After a certain period of time, something like 180 people reported symptoms of COVID. Okay? And out of the 180, like 165 or something like that, were people that had the placebo and not the people that got the vaccine. So that's where the 90% came from. But these people reported symptoms back to Pfizer or whoever was doing the test. There was no attempt, I don't believe, I know there wasn't in AstraZeneca, to run around these 44,000 people and every Saturday, say, show up at their doorstep with a COVID test to prove if they were positive or not. So we're
I doubt there would have been. Well, that would make sense.
No,
I don't doubt if that happened.
But you could easily make the case, what if all these other people got COVID just as bad as the people at the placebo, but it wasn't just as bad, that they had it, but it was like I had it. I wouldn't even have reported it. That could be. It may not be that they don't get it at all. It may mean that they get it in such a manner where it doesn't bother you. Okay, now, if that's the case and it's running around in your system, are you totally unable to pass it on to the next person? I would probably say that word total is a little harsh, but you're probably not going to pass it on to the next person. Okay, but I'm saying we don't really know. It's not even like we're doing a sample here. I mean, what you would think would have happened is out of the 22,000 on each side, we would take a random sample of one out of 100, say, and we give them a test every Saturday or different people, so we can find out if, you know, we have five people reporting symptoms out of the vaccine part, but by the way, 50 people actually showed positive without symptoms. I mean, it's something that I would want to know. Okay.
Yeah. But certainly, if you're going to shut everything down, you would want to know that before you did it.
Well, but I'm saying that, so they're not doing that, okay?
Right.
All right, so whatever. I'm not Joe Pfizer and I'm not Joe FDA, but they're not doing that. So of course, this lady picks up on this. We don't know for sure that they don't have light cases and actually have the disease in them. So therefore, we're going to recommend that people wear masks and socially distance like forever. God, wait a minute. Forever is like a long time or whatever. I mean, you know, so where are we going with this? I mean, this thing is out there pretty fast, and we still had, you know, last week or last month, out of the people who died in Illinois, still we had, what, 4,000 in nursing homes?
Right.
We have, nobody can visit anybody there, at least in most cases. Nobody can bring mom dinner. Mom can't go next door and talk to your mom and play bridge or play 500 rummy with her. God, I don't know. I remember how to play that, but I used to play with my grandmother all the time. But you can't do any of that stuff. So we can't mess with the people anymore. So clearly, the germs are getting in there through employees, right? For people, I mean, how else could they be getting in there? And we're still having these problems in nursing homes. So I'm thinking for sure, the people who should get the vaccine first are the people in nursing homes, and should be the people. And I know this is going to be an anathema to white America, but no, Jay, you don't get it. The guy who's delivering your sandwich gets it. He's the guy who's out there, the guy who's mowing your lawn. The people that are, they should be the ones that are getting it, right, if they haven't already had it.
Well, if they're really essential employees, as we're told they are, and that they're putting themselves at a risk by going into, you know, homes or ringing doorbells or whatever, then, and we want that to continue, you know, I guess, you know, they should get it first.
Well, I think people here at PTI, we've been here every day because, you know, if you want to do stuff with your money, we have to be here. I think, well, I don't need it for another year because I have the antibodies, but I think the rest of the people here should get it. Maybe not first, but pretty close. Why not? We're here. We're not, I mean, the last people that should get it are public employees sitting at home getting a check.
Well, the whole, you know, language applied to this, Tom, I think is just turned topsy-turvy, and you can't really depend on any of these labels anymore. And I was thinking the other day about what the whole term essential workers means, and I see the signs up in the alderman's office, you know, thank you to our essential workers. And although that makes it seem like you're privileged that you are important enough where you can go out and do your job, what it really means, the subtext is, you are disposable.
Yeah.
That you are the sort of person who has a job that nobody else really wants to do or feels safe doing, but you have to do it. And as a result, you have to get out and do it. If you get sick, well, you know, that's a real shame. But it has nothing to do with whether your work is essential or not. It's whether you are somehow disposable. And the risk of doing your job is outweighed by the importance of you're doing the job for somebody else's benefit. And this to me is like a total slap down.
Well, it's essential.
It's making people look like you're really being thanked or rewarded, and you're just being told that, you know, if not you, it'll be somebody else. We don't care what happens to you. I'm just appalled by it.
How come it's not more generally talked about? I mean, when you say essential to the alderman, it is. People are essential to him.
It's right.
It has nothing to do with whether you're essential or not. I mean, the thought of having your garbage guys sitting at home getting paid without picking up the garbage wouldn't even cross anybody's mind. Yet your alderman is. who's more essential, for God's sake? I mean, I'd go without the alderman.
It's really turned into a way of telling everybody else, sort of by omission, that if you're not in one of these essential worker categories, that your job doesn't even deserve to exist. Or at least you don't deserve to have it. Or your job can be done away with, and nobody pays a price for it. We don't care if you pay a price for it because you don't have a paycheck anymore. That's not our problem. It turns it into now a weapon that makes everybody else feel like, even though I had a job, I'm not an essential worker. I guess my work can just be fiated out of existence, and you know, life will continue as normal. And that seems to be the narrative that's being pushed. People just keep slopping along with half of the people sitting at home doing nothing, and it's at some level things are getting done, sort of, but is this the way of making people feel that there's no place for them in the economy anymore? I think it certainly that's the real effect here. So it's a two-edged sword. It insults the people who are being called essential workers, and it tells everybody else, you don't even count as chopped liver.
Well, I would like to see, and I don't really have the solution on this tomorrow, but if you continue going down this road where you lose your big cities for any appreciable length of time, and you go back to, you know, smaller towns which are now growing without any rail, with any thought, I mean, despite the electric car craze, at the same time you're hauling down power plants and maybe letting the nukes go out of business, as to where this power is going to come from. I mean, nobody thinks about that. If you let your New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, those places with the ability to move people to work and back without being in a car, but literally by the hundreds of thousands, if you lose those economic engines, I don't see how many little towns does Google have to move to in Texas, not Google, Oracle have to move to in Texas to make up for that, and all you're going to do is make a traffic nightmare in that town, assuming people go to work. This whole idea that people are forever going to work from home, I don't buy that. I mean, some people maybe, but not the idea that you're going to be paying people you never see, that's so against the grain, you know, whatever.
The big cities like Chicago and New York, and, I mean, they have been able, at least, you know, in short term, survived as tourism centers where when they lost their manufacturing jobs, and look at Chicago's loss of manufacturing jobs and factories, but it was able to maintain itself as a magnet for people who were here to, you know, gawk at everything and go to the museums and stay in the hotels and eat at the fine restaurants and walk around and sop up the city. It was like a theme park trip. And you had a whole industry fueling that. You know, the entertainment industry and the theater industry and the hospitality industry were beneficiaries of that kind of thirst for entertainment. Well, that's gone now, too. And I mean, I just don't see Galva, Illinois, you know, the southwest of here, ever being a magnet like that, nor would it want to be. But you can't just kick people out of the cities or drive them away because you can't make a living here or do anything anymore and expect them to reconstruct anything half as good somewhere else without there being a total transformation of our thinking and the way we spend money and tax revenue and everything else. You can't make these little theme parks out of small towns and not pay a huge price somewhere down the road in the meantime, but you'll never come back to where you were. that there's an efficiency in having big cities and having them apportioned the way they are geographically, and you know what they've been designed to do as cities and the kind of energy they had. You can't just remove that and distribute it somewhere else and expect it to work. I don't know what thinking is going into this, but if you don't save the cities, you don't save the rural areas either.
Well, and you talk about the manufacturing, and I mean, all you have to do is take the Orange Line down the Midway, and I could point out there is way different than that, certainly on the south side, which I'm familiar with. There's nothing. If you want to put a factory that makes anything, for God's sake, there's got to be 10 spots, I can tell you tomorrow, where they've got a highway in the front door and a rail in the back door and nothing but land, probably a building there that needs renovation, but at least you're starting with something. I mean, the idea of that not being a potential efficient place to be, I don't get that at all. Why do you have to be in the middle of nowhere? I mean,
you don't, right? Well, it's, you know, just starting back with the Crosstown Expressway and, you know, actually encouraging, you know, to make the city a more functioning place, but also keep its manufacturing pretty much where it had always been, was served by the railroads, it was near the airports, it was close to expressways for truck traffic and so on. The city kind of, I think, and most cities generally, did a pretty good job of adapting to the way transportation and, you know, mercantile patterns were altering, and they were able to keep up with it pretty well. And some did better than others, of course, and some had better climates than others. But overall, the cities were organic things, and that's what makes it a city. It's got its own magnetism and its charm.
Well, but it has to do with the size and the capability, though, too, John. I mean, I'm going to, and God rest her soul, I mean, Maggie Daly was, and had influence, I think, on the hubby, was convinced that Chicago should become another San Francisco. But now people that have been, I mean, my first business trip ever was to San Francisco. And I've loved it since then. I've probably been there 30 times because when we first started the option business, I was a trader, but we started doing more retail. The people that caught on to options faster than anybody really were people from Silicon Valley because they had a lot of options of stock in their own companies. So they knew what options were. Right? So we're talking 25, 30 years ago. We would go out there and give, you know, lectures on how options work. And, I absolutely love the city. But I mean, to compare San Francisco to Chicago, I mean, when I was younger, I could walk across San Francisco in a day.
Right.
You know, I mean, so yeah, you're talking about, I don't know how many 100,000 people are in San Francisco, but you can kick factories to Oakland, you can do all that stuff and make it this incredible town of coffee shops and people with money and on the hill with the views and no bad smoke and no this, no that. You can do that. It's small enough. And you can essentially live off the factories in Oakland and all the other places where you kicked them to. But you got no dirty, stinking guy in your bar there who just came from whatever. That was the beauty of Billy Goats. Over by the Tribune. You'd have the executive of the Tribune, the ladies that work there sitting at one table, and four guys from the presses putting rags down on the chairs so they didn't get ink where their butt was, all in the same place. But that was Chicago. I mean, it's not anymore. But now we have people that say, okay, let's get all these factories the hell out of here. But there's 3 million people here. I mean, where's everybody going to work? You're not going to have 3 million people, you know, with clean outfits wandering around downtown, and that's it. I mean, you go to these other areas, you need other kinds of businesses. But we're not.
You don't want them driving 40, 50 miles every day, choking up the traffic arteries to get to the jobs. You don't want to be in the center city anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it was done poorly, and I don't know who was behind it, but it was done poorly. But now you have to find a way to get. I think, you know, I don't think they have to be necessarily pound and steel jobs. Well, you need to have some place there in Chicago that hire 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people that actually do something. You know, and we're not pushing that at all. I mean, Lori, I don't think, believes in that. But you know, what is the future? And now we have nothing but crime, or perceived crime, and now you have people leaving. And I don't see how you ever put Humpty Dumpty back together again. I mean, you go down where Pullman used to be, all the people are gone, the welding machines are gone, the cranes are gone, and all of a sudden you got a Walmart there. You couldn't put. I mean, what would it take to put a railroad manufacturer back where you used to have one, and they're gone? They're just gone. I mean, right?
There's no, well, and even if there were energy to do it, it would be, I mean, look how long it's taken them to fix the interchanges, you know, the expressway system. I hesitate to think how long it would take them to actually build, you know, a working factory that could become a magnet for jobs and for, you know, improvement and investment and everything else. I see it all going in the opposite direction, and it has been for quite a while.
Well, you had a piece of property there that when I was, I was at the tail end, but you still had 500-600 people making, well, actually on the factory floor, so you probably had 1,000 people total that were making, you know, whatever, union scale. This is in 1978, we're making, you know, 14, 15 bucks an hour, maybe 20. And now you've got, you know, what, 100 people made at Walmart making $12.50 or $10.50. This is progress? I mean, it clearly is not. You know, I mean,
well, I worked a summer job in college at Campbell Soup Factory down on 35th Street, right off the Stevenson there, just west of Western. Huge triangular piece of land. 5 or 6 buildings, enormous buildings on that site, 24-hour shifts. And, you know, the things were going there a mile a minute. It was an amazing thing to see, Tom, just to be a part of.
Oh, yeah.
And what that did for the neighborhood. And, I mean, of course, there was a lot of noise and a lot of dirt and a lot of traffic, but a lot of the people there could walk to their jobs and, you know, or drive a short distance, and they made good money, and it was a good product, and it had been there for years, and it's gone. Everything is raised. You know, nothing has ever been built there again. And it's unlikely now that anything like Campbell Soup would replace it at that site or any place, you know, near Chicago. So the land just sits there.
Yeah.
Just as centrally located as it always was. But where did those people go who worked there, and where did the money go that was, you know, where's it coming from now if it's not coming from having that business there? That's just one thing. You know, one little factory in a city that was full of them. But, you know, that isn't something you just mandate or regulate into existence, or even incentivize. There's not enough money around to incentivize that.
Well, I don't know if you've ever
building.
If you've ever making a trip out to I mean, Audrey's cousin has a auto dealership out in, I don't know, any of these areas, but like Coal City, those areas way out southwest.
Oh yeah.
And there's money out there because there's you have a nuclear plant there, and there's a couple industries out there, but because of the rail situation in the city, which never really got upgraded, and it took how many years to do the flyover in the Rock Island, and by the time they finished it, they don't need it anymore, right?
Right.
Well, in the meantime, there's this massive rail hub that was built out in Joliet, and if you drive down to Stevenson, you'll see all these old trucking companies that are not there anymore. I mean, when I was working on the docks, there was nothing but trucking companies right along the Stevenson on Pulaski, Cicero, because that's where the city was a absolute hotbed of activity, to where every place had nothing but trucks coming in every morning, every night. I go through a whole routine about how you did it, but that would bore the hell everybody. All I know is it was good money for me and reasonably good work. Although some of those things were heavy, Jack. just say it. Just say it. And I was never all that good at driving the forklift truck, so I was able to drive it and put it on my head. Anyway, my brother Dan got real good at the forklift. I never did get so good. But some of those guys.
I got a bum toenail from when I placed a 500-pound tub of sugar on my foot inadvertently when I was working at Campbell Soup.
Well, yeah, you gotta remember one night, I see there's this TV, and it's like waist height. So I look at the bill of lading, and it says, 90 pounds. And I go, okay, well, I can do that. So I grabbed the thing, and I had it waist high, right? And I'm thinking, this thing is no 90 pounds. It was, like, way over it. I'm going, where the hell do I put it? Like, I ended up, having to kind of drop it. All of a sudden, I hear this kind of tinkle of little glass inside. I'm going, oops. Oops. Oh, well. It looks to me like this thing got broken in New York. Not here. I dutifully loaded up in the next truck and set it on, but how do I know it wasn't already broken?
I know nothing.
I know nothing. But I mean, but there was a vibrancy, and when you lose the vibrancy, you can't get it back. And I think we need people that are in an office that need to understand that I understand that this COVID thing is really awful. Like I said, somebody I really liked, I found out, died from it last Friday, and there's people in nursing home, but we need to get by it in a way, doing the most minimal damage we can, and having a startup plan right there at the cusp. I mean, ready to roll. I mean, if these vaccines do work, and I honestly believe they will, I've been reading all the science behind it, and talk about me going on a limb, John. I think they're safe because they're not giving people the whole virus. I mean, it doesn't mean there won't be an allergic reaction here or there, but the chances of actually getting the virus from it are nil, because you're not getting the whole virus, from what I read. So I think we have, but let's, when they start to work, let's be ready. Let's not, wait and see 3 months and stuff. Let's be ahead of the curve for the first time here. And, we've managed to totally screw up the economy. We've managed to totally screw up our money supply system. We've got stuff valued totally wrong. We've got, houses going up through the roof where people can't afford them. If we ever get interest rates back, everybody who's buying a house now is going to lose money on the place for a while. We've got taxes that are going up. We've got everybody broke. And yet, we need to anticipate and not constantly be reacting to things. We need some kind of planning here, and I don't see it. Do you?
I don't see it at all. And they've got to start rethinking labels like essential workers, and also, stop treating people who are well as the ones who need to quarantine themselves and not interact with anybody else. We've turned this into a kind of prison camp mentality where everybody is a cause for concern about passing on COVID. And whether you have a vaccine or not, you've got to start changing that mentality. And if you're sick, you stay home. And if you're fine, there's a job you should be doing. And boy, we want you to come back and do it under as safe a conditions as we can manage. But don't kind of insinuate that everybody is guilty in some ways, if you're still walking around, that you've got the threat that you're posing by being out and among other people. That's just dead wrong. And I think at some level it's deeply immoral.
Well, we're gonna end up with our own version of the Star of David. We know that. Am I right or not?
Yeah. Well, so it's coming. You're gonna need passports to do anything. To walk across the street, you're gonna need your passport.
If you didn't get your vaccine, you're not gonna be able to go anywhere. Anyway, John, thank you very much.
Yep.
Talk to you. S&P futures up 25. We were up 30, but still up pretty heavy. NASDAQ up 44. Today we're up 75. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello, and I'm back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's with Mr. Matt Weber on the board. I can almost talk this morning. S&P futures up 24. NASDAQ futures up 45. That's high, but not as high as it was a minute ago. Dow still up 251. Individual stocks in the Dow up a bunch. We got Goldman Sachs up 4. We got Boeing up 4. We've got American Express up 250. And we've got Nike up $2. Got to get those Nike shoes. Don't worry about those factory workers over in China. The hell with that. Just saying. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 153. That's 1.1%. FTSE up $2 only. These guys have come down since last time we did this. So that's flat. CAC around up 55. That's 1%. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei up 79.3, Shanghai up 21.7, Hang Seng down 116, that's 0.4. We've got bonds, 0.93, up 4 basis points. So I'm going to say 0.93 is, we'll ask Mike, but I think that's as high as it's been in 6, 8 months, easy. Bund, minus 0.60. As they say they're going out to borrow money, I think they're going out to print money, but that's just me. Japan, same spot, 0.02. Oil is up 51 cents, 47.08. Brent up 54 cents, 50.51. I don't think we've seen Brent over $50 in a while either. Natural gas up 9 cents, 2.68. Remember, it was close to 3, or actually might have touched 3, as it was cold a few weeks ago, but now it's getting cooler. But still, the first part of the winter has been pretty mild. That's why natural gas has come back a little bit. RBOB up a penny to 131. We had gold getting its butt kicked this morning a little bit. Down 15, 18, 28. Silver down a penny. It was down more. 24.07, so silver's come back at almost even. Copper unchanged at 3.52. U.S. stimulus hopes again, Matty. So what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. I love the idea of the rain delay and the shooting. So if we could just rain for solid for a month, we wouldn't have any shootings?
I think that's a good solution. Coming up on 37 minutes past the hour, good morning once again to everyone out there. Still very quiet on the area expressways. Absolutely no delays to speak of, no accidents or slowdowns. So enjoy a nice quiet commute off the expressways. Still that issue down south, Torrance Avenue between 122nd and 126th is closed on the southbound side due to an accident involving a semi that happened earlier this morning. Northbound lanes are open, but that's our only issue in the area this morning. So enjoy a nice quiet commute. Weather today, clouds early, could see some sun later on, but the temperatures will stay right where they are right now, which is right around 30 degrees. That's our high, and that's where we're at currently. With some sunshine later on. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 62 today. Right now it's clear and 46. In sports, the Bears snapped their 6-game losing streak. They blew out the Texans 36-7 yesterday at Soldier Field. So the Bears are 6-7 and officially still in the playoff hunt, although a long shot as it may be. They're one game out. Cardinals beat the Giants, and they're now holding the final playoff spot in the NFC, beating New York 26-7. Sunday Night Football, it was the Bills taking care of the Steelers, 26-15. Steelers have dropped two in a row after an 11-0 start. And as we mentioned last hour, Lovie Smith was fired as the Illinois head football coach after five seasons.
Egon.
He was 17-39, 10-33 in the Big Ten. Chief.
What did you think? Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Chief, how's it going this morning?
Did you, I don't know if I sent it to you, did you see the list of possible replacements for Lovie? Did you have the names jump out of that on that list for you, Matty?
I didn't see the list that you sent. Who was on there?
Evidently, the offensive coordinator of Notre Dame went to Illinois. There was somebody from San Diego State. Not San Diego State, so South Dakota State. A couple other guys that went there. I mean, it's a pretty good list that they thought might want that job. Guys that have been in the running for other ones.
Well, it's a Big Ten job, even though it's not. They haven't been as good, you know, in the last 10 years as they were probably the previous 20 years before that. But still, a Big Ten job. You would think it'd be relatively well, you know, coveted.
Question for both of you guys before we get into the volatility and other stuff. And $1 trillion a week, we need to keep this market going, Mike. That's just saying. $1 trillion came out of Europe last week. We'll get a stimulus package this week. That'll be half a trillion. It'll be good for a few days at least. Anyway, you've seen the phenomenon in the Big Ten where the Indiana, which was, I'd say, out of all the, you would ask me which team in the Big Ten would never have a team, it would be Indiana. The state doesn't care. Where in Nebraska, obviously the whole state does care. They don't have any professional teams. Yet Nebraska is the part that goes over the fence last, and Indiana is moving forward. Do you think it's because of sort of equal TV, and my long way of getting there, do you think it's possible to turn the program around in Illinois, given the fact that nobody in Illinois even cares about them?
I do think it's possible. It's all about the coach and getting the recruits in there. I mean, it's never changed in college sports. You can either recruit good players or you can't, or you can develop, you know, players that you see potential in when they're freshmen, and by the time they're juniors and seniors, they're good, and that's another way as well. And, you know, you've seen it with Northwestern. No one cared about Northwestern for a long time, and they've consistently been competitive, and then every couple of years have had a really good team like they do this year. If they can do it, I would say Illinois can certainly do it because, you know, it's really hard to get into Northwestern. Not that it's easy to get into Illinois, but.
Well, Northwestern's had a string of really solid coaches that have gone, well, starting with Eric Parsegian, that went on to other places.
That's my point.
Yeah.
You got to have a great coach, and when you do, and they can recruit players, you can compete. You know Ohio State's going to be there, but Michigan has been horrible, and you know that's why Jim Harbaugh's not going to last very long there.
Well, Penn State too has been lousy,
and Penn State's had a bad year, although they've had many good years in a row. This year they've had they started out 0-5. They've actually won 3 in a row now, but yeah, they've had a bad year too. But you can win. I mean, the Minnesota coach, although they have kind of had a down year this year, they've turned that program around where they were really good last year. Iowa's been consistently good. Wisconsin, until this year, has been consistently good. So you can certainly win even if you're not Ohio State, but it's all about getting the players.
Well, that's the truth. Who are the X's and who are the O's? So, Mike, last night I get the call from one of the contributors to the show and say, hey, are you okay? Are your clients okay with the people hacking into Washington, how bad's the market going down? I go, the market's up. They just put $1 trillion in from Europe. We don't care about no stinking news. It's all about money.
And, it's all about, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you put enough money into the system. It's not wealth inflation. It's just asset inflation, and prices are going to go higher. It's a classic economic theory. I mean, it's playing right into what we'd expect. The market's not going to see major pullbacks with enough money being just placed in the system. Eventually, will it catch up? Absolutely. And there will be a day of reckoning at some point, but we're not there yet.
Mike, just because you become a new father and so forth doesn't mean you got to go getting old on me. Clearly, that's not nouveau monetary theory. You're talking like me.
Well, you know, I don't know if this is a new world monetary theory, but at the end of the day, you need to have healthy markets, and a healthy market is not just up. Right? That's not a healthy market. Markets are supposed to go up and down, and they're eventually you find a fair price hopefully by the end of the day, but definitely, you know, when you look at 30 days of trading, or actually, you know, maybe 22 in the month, you notice sort of a normalcy that starts to form, where you have markets that are up and markets that are down. Any given day that you go into trade the stock market, we've done studies, tons of studies on this, and overall, there's a positive trend to the market, but that's about 53% of the time the market's going to go up, 47% of the time the market's going to go down. That's on a longer-term scale. When you look at it on a day-to-day basis, you can honestly say up or down, it should be 50-50. It just doesn't feel 50-50 right now. It feels like it's much stronger to the upside, and these historical norms tend to play out over time. So I would expect there's going to be some type of movement to the downside more often coming up, just as a statistical measure. Statistics typically don't break down this quickly. But it's a unique time right now.
Well, Mike, why is it that if you were to talk to the people in charge, God, I even shudder to say this, guys like the Larry Kudlow when he was still on CNBC before he never had a decent economic thing to say, and then went on to be our economic head of the country or whatever. I didn't want to go there, but when people talk about how the best thing for the middle class and working people is like lowered corporate rates or things like that, there's this constant trickle down theory. That obviously if you're the people that are supposed to be where the stuff's trickled to you, you never see any of it. I think if Jerome Powell was then on the show with us, you'd come in for that if he was here, I assume. I'd even get coffee. We'd find a place that was open. If he was here, he would absolutely, you know, in a very convincing way, probably, because the guy's no dummy, tell us about how important this is for the economy. And he clearly either doesn't have, he's either got the blinders on or he's got something. He thinks that somehow this is helping everybody else. And yet it really isn't. I mean, the class of people, there are people that, quote, own a house, and there are people that are looking to buy a house, right? Now, I guess the people who we care about are the people that own the house, and we want the price of the house to go up every year, so that's asset inflation, not even talking about stock markets. Yet the person buying the house, why should he have to pay something that's inflated, right? Why can't the price just be fair? That's what you're saying. And over a period of time, they're gonna always seem to err, shall we say, on the side of the asset holders, because those are the people who essentially write their checks. We've seen it happen, you know, how many times? And yet, it continues to happen again. But he honestly believes that what he's doing is helping every man. And I'll bet he would, in a second, he would say, well, you don't realize how many million people in this country have 401ks. But that's basically the only good thing they have to say. Because otherwise, stuff going up on people doesn't help them, right? If you're a consumer,
it doesn't help. It makes things worse. It magnifies the problem. And look, these experiments have played out in other countries before. We've seen it on epic scales in some countries. But we know you can't just keep putting money into the system and expect to have a viable economy years from now. It cannot work. It doesn't work. But, at the same time, you understand the sort of situation that we're in where right now would be a horrible time to be struggling with a big recession with not great outlook for the near-term future. So I understand the dilemma. But at the same time, you need to have some controls in place so you don't have an artificially high market, because my opinion is things eventually come in line. I mean, they can stay out of order for a while, but things eventually come in line. The idea of asset inflation and the fact that housing prices need to go higher. It definitely helps out the buyer, or rather the owner of the house, that happens. And you want to see that happen in some sense, because you want wealth to stay in the system and you want wealth to grow. But, of course, they can't every year just go higher by necessity. There still is a free-floating market on that as well.
Well, you also, unless you have somebody and try and, I don't want to go sexist on us here, but I try and talk, you and I might be able to talk a friend of ours into doing that, but you're never going to get that person to talk his wife into doing it, because clearly at some stage, the way you take advantage of that, because you become a creature to the system, and all you're doing is trading dollars, right? So if I sell my place at a price that I think is, high, too high, and I go buy another place, all I'm doing is trading bucks, right? So the only thing you can do, which you never see anybody do, is to say, wifey, or girlfriendy, by the way, this place you love living in, I just sold it, and because I think it's too high, and we're going to go rent for a year, and when the place all falls apart, we're going to go back and buy a place just like ours for 20% less. Well, I'm going to say you're somewhere between sleeping on a sofa and get a cast iron pot bruise on your head at that point. Right, it's not what anybody does, right?
No, it isn't, and that's because of the assumption. Like, look, we don't. It's volatile, but it's not that volatile. And, speaking of volatility, I was looking at the stock market this morning, and we've been making all time highs every other day.
Yeah.
We're at very near all time highs in the S&P 500, and volatility maintains is level at 22%, and we've been there. We haven't broken down below 20 really at all this year. We keep hanging out, and there's almost a floor right now in volatility that just doesn't want to go below 20%. So it's at 22%. What does that mean? Well, you could think of volatility in this sense. You could say 22% in VIX represents what the market anticipates a percentage move in the S&P 500 over the course of 1 year. So 22%, if you hear that number being quoted on the VIX, think of it as in 1 year, the expectation, or within one standard deviation expectation, which is 68% of the time, we're going to expect to see the market go up or down 22%, plus or minus. So we can't say if it's going to be plus, we can't say if it's going to be minus, but those are what the option prices are being priced around when the VIX is that high. So
That's a lot. Because what's a normal year? 7, 6, 5?
That'd be like a normal year. And volatility for the past several years before this, twice a year, it got over 20. Three times a year, it was over 20. Those were short-lived times over 20. Call it a week and a half, most. So to spend an entire year over 20, this has been the most interesting year from a trading perspective in recent time. I mean, I don't know when the last time you ever saw something like this. Maybe the Great Depression, but they didn't really have volatility going, or they didn't have the calculations that we have today. So it's hard to say. There's another thing that I just wanted to mention today. I did a little study before we came on the show. I keep hearing this thing of the Santa Claus rally and December being the strongest month of the calendar year. And there's a lot of theories behind why there's this Santa Claus rally, but usually there's a lot of cheer going into the end of the year, and people are buying stock. And December's the strongest year, or strongest month. So I just wanted to check that out. Actually, as it turns out, December's only the fourth strongest month of the 12-month calendar year. And interestingly enough, the strongest month is March. The weakest month is October. And that's kind of interesting because we've seen a lot of crashes in October. So that maybe adds a little bit to the fact that it's the weakest month when you start doing those averages over time. But I don't know. It doesn't support the idea of some of these old adages that we talk about all the time being, well, the Santa Claus rally, you know, get long in May and walk away, things like that. None of these real old adages that they're fun to say and they keep you engaged, but oftentimes when you actually do the back historical tests on these, they come up short.
Never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
That's right.
what they say in A Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, when the legend conflicts with the facts, print the legend. No, just saying. But when you say this year we've had movement in the market, that should have, well, for me, trading the retail accounts for people, I found so much of the movement, Mike, being some governmental move overnight where other people have already traded it. I don't feel like I've been able to participate in 20% of the moves. If they're constantly Fed-driven, they're constantly policy-driven, they're tweet-driven, we're going to have a settlement in the stimulus today, no, it's tomorrow, and it's the next day. Yeah, there is. No, there isn't. I couldn't trade any of that stuff. I mean,
overnight we have had a lot of moves overnight that revert by the opening bell. It's hard to gauge what's going on with this amount of volatility because it's not unusual to see, a 4% move, 3% move overnight and then see it reverse the next day. So, typically I would say there's more of a, less of a reversion when you get big moves, and usually if it's down 3%, it's going to stay down 3%. But how many times this year have we seen it down a couple percent anyways and revert by even the opening bell the next day? So that makes it hard. The other thing that makes it hard to participate is the fact that markets are going one way. It's hard to participate when, short of just going with the trend or following the momentum, short of doing that, you haven't been able to participate. And I'd argue there's more risk to just passively being long without maybe something like you do with some type of strategy loss prevention mechanism in there, because the fact is when you say 22% for VIX, it's a plus or minus calculation, and the math doesn't lie. The math over time hasn't lied. Historically, when you do all the numbers, it hasn't lied. So it's not playing the whole picture out that we normally see this year. But if you say over the next five years, is it going to normalize? Hard to say, but there's a better likelihood that it normalizes and you see a market that isn't just going up and down or just going up every day, but going up and down.
Well, if this is the one year, if you had I use how my grandma used to pronounce it, if we had a wired up cockroach in the Oval Office and in the Fed's office, this would be the year we made a bunch of dough with that.
I would say so, yeah.
I have a question for you. You and I both are, I guess we're old school. You're a younger old school guy, though. we realize that if you just keep pounding money in, the trillion for the Fed, and we're going to have our stimulus plan. But I have a feeling that both governments, Europe here, probably even Japan, have decided that the vaccine, that somehow this is it. This is the last we're going to come up with, even though I think the actual numbers to hurt the economy is yet to show up. It's going to show up worse, I think, but I hope not. But sort of that aside for a second, you and I are saying there's going to be a day of reckoning someplace. So how the hell, for my investors and our listeners and for our own pocketbooks, how are we going to be here one day and one Monday or Wednesday or whenever we are and say, today's the day and we're going to buy these puts in the spider at 50 cents and we're going to sell them on the close at 30 bucks? I mean, how are we going to know that day? Because to this day, and I use the word day too much, I don't have no idea why the August of 82 rally didn't start the week before, a week after, a month before, a month after. I mean, the actual catch catch it enough that we can make a trade this morning and you know, quadruple our money by the end of the day, which isn't the kind of trading I normally do for people. Boy, I'd love to. Here, I bought 100 of these at 50 cents. It was $5,000. And by the way, it was 100 grand by the end of the day. How's that? So, I mean, I'm sure there's somebody that's going to tell me you should have bought more. You know you're going to get that from somebody, Mike. But by and large, how are we going to know when it's the time?
You're not going to know when it's time ever, because the market is, again, it's a 50-50 shot every single day. Typically, you know, a market sell-off begins with one sell, and it snowballs, and it has a snowball effect. And pretty soon you have everyone jumping down the same pipe. That pipe gets backed up, and then you get a bigger market sell-off. But we're not going to know when that day comes, but how can we protect ourselves? Part of it is a size game. You don't want your portfolio wrapped up into just one asset. You need to diversify across other assets, and you need to look at correlation. Correlations are really important in the sense that if you have a portfolio, you might say I'm in 10 different stocks, but if they're all highly correlated, you know, industry to industry, or same industry, or industries that tend to operate together, then you're not as diversified as you might think. You have to start thinking a little broader along different commodities and different financial assets, like maybe bonds, adding that into your portfolio. Not because you have an opinion on bonds, but you just want something that's inversely correlated to the market. What that means is if the market goes up, bonds typically go down, especially when markets go down big, we see a very strong reversion of bonds going to the upside. And the same can be with gold. I mean, call it flight to safety. We normally see gold going much higher as markets crash. So having those in your portfolio is going to naturally add a layer of protection, and it's going to lower what we really want to do, which is lower portfolio volatility.
Well, that's Mike. We got a dash, buddy. Thank you very much, as usual. S&P futures up 26, NASDAQ futures up 55. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
A little early.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.